Hello and welcome to a new English edition of my podcast Helium Talk, das Kunstgespräch. My name is Jörg Heikaus and my guest today is Catherine Mikesell from Fountainhead, Miami. All right, let's do this. I hope you're all doing great. It's busy times here at Helium Cowboy with a bunch of shows coming up this winter and creating new artwork and starting on my book. So still no chance I will go back to making one podcast per week again, but I do hope I can at some point in the future. I will also have a German language episode back up soon. Until then, if you'd rather listen to those recorded in my mother language, I can always highly recommend to look at all the shows that I've already published. There are some really good and insightful ones you probably haven't heard yet. This one is already number 61, and I can't even begin to tell you how proud I am of my journey into the world of podcasts that I embarked upon only in February last year. My guest today is Catherine Mikesell. Catherine and her husband Dan started Fountainhead Miami, a residency program for artists over a decade ago. When I met Catherine on one of these crazy Miami art fairs back then, they just had started this, and I have admired their relentless work on helping artists to build sustainable careers and at the same time cultivate new audiences for the arts. Privately run residencies are a beautiful thing, because just think about it. There are people who love art so much that they dedicate their personal time and resources and of course their money to give artists a place where they can create freely, in a different environment, a different landscape and often different mentality for a certain amount of time. It's not just the love for the arts. It is also about understanding the needs of artists and encouraging the process of how art gets into this world in the first place. If you're an artist listening to this, I can only highly recommend that you research residencies and start writing applications. It is simply a great way to get out in the world and learn and have fun. As an artist, I've never entered a residency program myself. I have never applied to any, and when I was younger, it was also not on my radar at all. But I love that concept, and for many years I've tried to set one up with partners in Hamburg, but didn't get it out of the doors. It really takes a lot, which makes all that Fountainhead stands for today even more impressive to me, and I'm so happy that Catherine found the time to talk with me in my podcast. Alright, before we start this conversation, I want to thank you all again for your emails and comments and likes. I really appreciate your feedback. You're amazing. Keep it coming by mail at hello@heliumtalk.com or direct messages and comments on my Instagram @heliumcowboy. And yes, please do me a favor and rate this podcast on iTunes. Write a quick review, give me 5 stars, 4 stars, well, if you must, 3 stars. But if you go below that, you can just go fuck yourself and stop listening forever. Okay, so sorry about that outburst, but you see, these iTunes ratings are really important to us podcasters, and maybe you like my show enough to take the time and give it some love. But for now, have a great day, you all, and I hope you enjoy the 61st episode of the Helium Talk podcast with Catherine Mikesell. I've just been thinking about it. It's been 10 years. Well, in December, it will be 10 years since I've been the last time in Miami.
It's been that long since the last time.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Seems like forever.
Yeah, it's like a really long time. It doesn't feel that long at all. And I was just wondering how the city has changed over these past 10 years that I haven't been there.
Oh my goodness. I wish I could show you the city. It looks like the skyline is completely different. Completely different. There are probably, I don't know, 30 new high-rises, if not more, in the last 10 years. Wow. I mean, honestly, when I say that the skyline has changed completely, it's changed completely. Yeah. The building has just been unbelievable. I mean, you let's see. Gosh, and if you think about our institutional landscape since you were here, you know, MAM, which was the, you know, one of the main museums, was, you know, this little institution in downtown Miami. Now it is this extraordinary museum on the water. It's now called the Perez Art Museum Miami. It's a stunning museum. They're building an amazing collection, hosting fantastic shows. They have a show up with Teresita Fernandez right now that is just mind-blowing. The ICA is a brand new institution that is now in the design district, which you wouldn't recognize anymore either. The design district went from being, you know, Craig still owns it, but it went from being, you know, furniture to the trade to opening up to, you know, furniture and things like that for everyone. And now it is the fashion mecca of Miami, and they've put in an incredible public art collection throughout the, you know, throughout the district. The ICA is there. We have Museum Garage, which is this fantastic garage that was designed by Terry Riley, who used to be the director at the MAM, which became PAM. So much has changed.
Yeah.
It's so exciting to be living here.
Yeah, I remember the first time I came to Miami, I think it was in 2005 or 2006. And I mean, that's a bunch of years ago. So the landscape has definitely changed as well in the regards of all the fairs and gallery scene, probably. I think I remember at that time there weren't that many galleries actually in town, you know?
Yeah. I wouldn't say that our gallery scene has grown. I mean, it's grown. I think more than anything, the galleries have matured. But we still don't have like a ton of galleries. We have, you know, we have a couple handfuls of good galleries, but they're no longer, I guess 10 years ago is when they were in Wynwood. Now there's really the only art really left in Wynwood is Wynwood Walls and the, you know, the outdoor graffiti museum. But most of the galleries now are in Little Haiti. There are some opening up in Alapata. There's a few on the beach. But most of the galleries, whereas before we had kind of a destination being Wynwood, where you could walk from one gallery to the next. Mm-hmm. Now, while they're geographically somewhat close, they're really destinations because you can't walk from one to the other. Yeah. But on the positive side of that is that many of the galleries own their buildings, so they can, you know, they'll be staying there, and they can invest in the real estate, and they have a long term.
Yeah, that's pretty rare. Yeah, that's pretty rare. I don't think that any gallery, I mean, many galleries here in Hamburg, you know, sort of own the spaces.
Right. I think it's rare anywhere.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah, but that's good. I mean, I don't know. I was thinking about galleries that I remember and people running them. I remember Spinello. Is he still around?
He's still around.
Yeah. He's been, I think he was a teenager then, and now
he's still young. Still I mean, he started so young. Yeah. Anthony's great. Like, he's done a number of projects. He now has a space which is a home that he purchased. So he's kind of doing a different model, which I don't think he's fully launched it yet, but I think he's smart and he's good and he has a great eye. Yeah. So he'll do well. But then since closing, so he moved to Little Haiti, like most of the galleries, took on this beautiful space, but it was huge. I mean, the programming and the expense that went into that, I think it was just, not that he couldn't do it. It was more like, in the end, I don't think he wanted to do all of that. You know, he wanted to do projects that were more ambitious, and not just because he had big space. You know what I mean? Like, he wanted to do different projects. So he did, he did several fairs that weren't fairs. Like, he did one was called Fair, actually, and it was in Brickell City Center, and it had it was installations around the center that were fantastic, all works by female artists. He did another show prior to that on the beach. Oh goodness, I can't remember what it was called, but it was all video and performance work by female. Females. He's done a number of projects. So he's doing great.
He's just one person that when I close my eyes, I still remember how he looks. Yeah. You know, people I've forgotten, I think.
And actually, what am I saying? He just opened up a new space. I'm an idiot. He went back.
Hard to keep up.
It is. I'm like, wait a second. I just saw a great show there by an artist, Jared. So yes, no, actually he went back to a space that he had several years ago and took on a different space in there. And he's actually, he just had two of his, the artists that he represents from Miami were in the Whitney Biennial. Okay. Augustina Woodgate and Eddie Arroyo. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, sounds like. Yeah, it's... So, I mean, you know, now that I'm celebrating my 10 years anniversary of not being in Miami, I kind of tried to get that back into my schedule. But I told you a few years ago, for me, as a gallery, there's no use in going there. I've reduced the gallery dramatically anyway. I'm doing maybe 2 or 3 shows a year with other artists. I'm focusing on my work. And I think I said I'll be back in Miami when there's a gallery that shows my work.
You know, right. I mean, there you go.
It has been the case, you know, but I mean, just for 2 small little works, I don't think I'm going to go to Miami. let's get to what you're actually doing, which is older than 10 years, I think, your residency program, right? That's how we met in back then. How did Fountainhead start? I mean, just briefly an explanation. It's a residency program on your land, you know, on your property. There's a house where you invite 2 artists, I think, at the same time.
So we started, believe it or not, it's been 2008 is when we started, March of 2008.
Okay.
And it's actually the home next to our home. So it's in the same neighborhood, but it's a standalone home with its own property. Mm-hmm. And we invite 3 artists at a time.
Okay.
And we have 4 if there's a collaborative, a couple that are both artists, or mm-hmm. a collaborative team that are willing to sleep in the same bedroom. We do have 1 bedroom with 2 beds in it. But we invite 3 artists at a time. And mm-hmm. over the years, it's transformed as you would expect it to over time. And we used to invite artists to come, and we didn't really specify the period, and artists kind of came and went. We never ever had an empty space. So usually mm-hmm. it was like one day, one artist would leave in the morning, another artist would come in the afternoon. It was just kind of this constant, like,
all right,
coming and going. And we realized that, you know, as we matured, that the programming was an important part of it, to help people in the city, in Miami, and help artists and patrons of the arts, you know, appreciators of the arts, to be able to be involved. We really needed to be able to host kind of more regular programming. And when you had people mm-hmm. kind of coming and going so frequently, you couldn't really host anything, because somebody might have just gotten there and someone else might have been there for a month, and one person has nothing to show and the other person, you know, has six paintings, you know. Mm-hmm. So over the years, we've kind of transitioned to having people start and stop at the same time. And mm-hmm. and now we're really in 2020, it will, for the most part, be starting at the beginning of the month and mm-hmm. finishing at the end of the month. And also, when we started, we had people that could stay for as long as 2 months. Mm-hmm. And then we had some people that came for 10 days. I never expected people to, you know, only come for 10 days. But in the end, you know, for an artist that has a family, that mm-hmm. maybe has a part-time job, to be able to get 10 days just to focus on themselves and their work was, you know, a gift that I just didn't expect. So mm-hmm. I still want to try to figure out ways in which to have those opportunities for people as well, mm-hmm. because I think that's important too. But for the most part now, we're the second to the 30th of the month. I've actually for the first time implemented getting a full day to clean the house and get everything reorganized and patched and everything else. It was like, before we relied on the artists to kind of leave their spaces as they've found them. Mm-hmm. And we still ask that, but we realize that it doesn't always happen. I mean, a lot of it too is that people are just like working. Artists are working up until the very end, right? Sure, They're trying to take advantage mm-hmm. of every moment, which is what we want them to do.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Right. So,
yeah, I mean, it's a huge opportunity for artists to do residencies because it's just like you are taken out of your normal environment, that, you know, where it's always something, you know, sort of going on that distracts you. And I think it's a huge thing that you're doing with Fountainhead.
Thank you. I realize, you know, I wish every profession had this, because I think it's great for every, like, we all need to shake mm-hmm. ourselves up a little bit, mm-hmm. right? And do it not from a vacation. I mean, a vacation is one thing, right? But it's but it's different. You know, this is actually for your, you know, your livelihood, not just, I mean, for your life is important. Vacations are important, but enabling yourself to go deep into your practice without, you know, daily routines, without family, without friends, without, you know, people pulling you in 10 different directions, but have it still be about your work and your livelihood. I think that's, you know, that's what's so important. But you asked me a question that I didn't answer, and that was, you know, how do we start and why? And really, you know, Dan and I chose art as our, I don't know, I guess in some ways our gift to each other or our gift to our marriage. We wanted something that was somewhat new to both of us. It was completely new to me. Dan was raised in a family that collected art, you know, one or two works a year. So it wasn't completely new to him, but it wasn't something that he had really focused much time or energy on personally. So we chose art to be that thing that we did, that we could learn together and spend time together. Mm-hmm. And that we could also do it, you know, while we were apart and share our stories. Because for the first, you know, almost 10 years of our marriage, we lived only on weekends together because we both traveled extensively for work. So we kind of dug deep in to the art. And we realized very quickly that getting to know the artist was what really drew us to art. It wasn't the objects, it was the people, you know, and being able to see the world through someone else's eyes and their experiences, and to see how they take their beliefs and their experiences and their histories and create something and put it out to the world. Just amazed us, inspired us. I don't know. We just, I almost can't describe how strongly we felt about, you know, what an extraordinary gift artists are, right? And so, you know, we're not the Rockefellers, so we can't, you know, we can't buy all of the we can't buy a work from every artist that we that we admired, and frankly, you know there were many artists that we admired that maybe their work isn't something that we would want to live with, but that didn't mean that we didn't value the work, right? Or value them. So we were just trying to think of a way to support artists in a way that was kind of more meaningful and more long lasting, and that, you know, wasn't just a quick flash. And then at the same time, as we were talking earlier about the difference in Miami, you know, Miami has been growing by leaps and bounds, not only, you know, through the landscape of, you know, construction and buildings and people moving here, but culturally, you know, we talked about the museums, but also, you know, the artists, the galleries, the people interested in art, the people understanding the value of art and culture within their lives. I mean, that too has increased in Miami. But back then, you know, we're young. Miami's a very young city, you know, so the museums didn't have the budgets to bring artists in for long periods of time, right? So the artists would come in, hang a show, spend two nights, and then they'd be out of here. And we said, wouldn't it be great if we could help them so that the artists could stay? They could get to know Miami. The people that were interested in art could be able to talk with the artists and actually learn about their work and why they make what they do, and not just see the work on the wall.
Yeah. Are you originally from Miami?
No, I'm not. I'm originally from Pennsylvania, and my husband's from Michigan.
All right.
So, but we fell in love with Miami.
Yeah. Oh, well, understandably. Yeah.
So,
and then
the residency provided both.
Yeah.
It did both.
Yeah. So the decision to do this, because I mean there's a lot you take on. I mean, I've been working with galleries for a long time too, and it's also not always easy, and it's a pretty complex thing. It's not like you're taking on somebody who does an internship at a carpenter,
right?
Who always basically learns the same things or has the same routines that he goes. There's no routine with artists.
No.
You know, everyone is completely different. So the decision to go and say, okay, now we kind of make an institution out of this that. That's kind of risky.
Yeah. Well, I think we, in some ways, I say thankfully, naively went into this. It was just a passion. It was just something we wanted to do. We definitely at the time did not have a long-term plan, mm-hmm. right? And truly, like you said, we had no idea what we were getting ourselves into in many ways. Thankfully, I'm very much a people person. Like I really think that's why I was put on this earth, is to get to know people, help people, connect people, help them feel good about themselves and what they're doing. I love people. Mm-hmm. So that helps a lot, but it's most people I talk to that know me, they're like, what you do looks so, I don't know, glamorous is not the word, but just so exciting and fun. Mm-hmm. But nobody would actually take your job if they knew everything that you had to do. But for me, it's perfect. But it is, it's a lot of, it's many personalities. You're mm-hmm. also, you're also bringing together three people that have never met, mm-hmm. that, are often coming from different countries around the world, have completely yeah. different experiences, often have different lifestyles. And so you really have to, you kind of have to nurture all of that, and be there to really help people feel comfortable, to help. And I've learned a lot over the years as to how to, help facilitate that. So one of the things that we do now, or I would say we try to do as early on as we can, is to have the artists sit down and do studio visits together, the three of them, because you can always find a commonality if you spend time like talking, right? And I think that was one of the most important things that I learned, because you can have people that, like I said, have vastly different lives, whose practices are vastly different. But within a half an hour or an hour, if people are truly listening and sharing mm-hmm. stories, you always find something. And more often than not, many ways in which their either beliefs or their lifestyle, there's always overlap. And I think mm-hmm. that is... one of the keys to Fountainhead is that, a lot of artists like find friends for life. Mm-hmm. And I would say more than, I'm frequently asked about the, success, quote unquote, success of artists after the residency, and, mm-hmm. and everybody wants big names and I said I don't like to answer that question. That's not, that's very superficial. I think for me, it's like they now have a new friend that maybe inspired something completely different, or they don't judge this particular person in the same way, or maybe they just have a different outlook on life. Like those are the things that I'm proud of, and obviously the practice is important, but
I think it's practice. I mean, success in arts is a very, very tough thing. I mean, of course, you can always say, oh, cool, this guy is financially successful. He hangs in this and this museum. Her work is has just been on the cover of Art Forum or whatever. Right. That's also success. But I've just had a discussion in a different podcast where actually the seats were reversed. So I was the guest in the podcast. There's many levels of success in art. I think meeting other people is a very high privilege when you are an artist that can travel to other shows and meet other shows, because that also raises the level of respect you have towards the other artists, which probably if you just judge them on Instagram, you say, okay, I've seen that, or you know, I'm much better. Yeah. When you meet, sit down and see, you know, so what's actually the story behind it. The depth is very important that you learn. And I just I think, for example, we had this topic: when is an exhibition successful? And of course, an exhibition can be successful if you sell out, but it can also be, it doesn't necessarily have to be a successful exhibition, because if nobody comes and nobody interacts with the work and nobody sees it and nobody experiences what the gallery and the artists have set out to be doing, then it's also a failure as an exhibition, I think. And so I think what success in art is always very difficult to judge. So I think if you have people that meet, if you've never had big fights in there, or not always have big fights, if there's something coming out in the end that they can take with them and bring them on the next level, I think that's already the success of a residency.
Yeah, I mean, believe it or not, so we've had over 380 artists.
Yeah.
I think now we're 44 or 45 different countries. Mm-hmm. And we've actually never had a fight. We've actually only had like two situations that were somewhat challenging. And one was just a gentleman very early on. I also talk with everyone first, and I follow my gut. I have very good instinct. And early on, I did not follow my gut, and I should have. And I learned a lesson. But I mean, in the end, the gentleman was nice. You know, it wasn't a fight. It wasn't anything like that. But it was just, it wasn't the right environment for him.
Yeah.
And I had concerns about that, and it was right. And he made a lot of work, and in his mind, he said it was successful, but I don't feel like it was. Mm-hmm. And then we actually had two guys that actually asked, they weren't scheduled to come together. They met at one of our Basel parties, one of pizza, beer, and a campfire. And they really got along, and they said, hey, can we switch things around so we can come together? Mm-hmm. And so I said, sure, you know, we made that happen. and then like halfway, they were like best friends at the start. And then halfway through, they had different views of relationships, and it put a wrench in them. And it was like, they would come over and they would be like, so and so. And finally I was like, I'm going nuts. I'm like, you guys are driving me nuts. You're adults. Like, you need to figure this out. Don't be tattletales. Like, grow up. Yeah, it is very funny. And in the end it was fine. And like I said, those are like the only two situations. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm 380 people. I think that's pretty good.
That's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot of people. You still have contact with most of them or all of them? Or?
I do. I try. I mean, I'm very open. I mean, the way we look at the residency is as a start. Mm. I mean, for us, it's, I mean, it's really just the beginning. I mean, we really think of Fountainhead as a family that, you know, continues to support one another. So, you know, we do the newsletter every month. We announce shows around the world. We announce, I've started to try to help with when artists do Kickstarter campaigns for new projects. I'll announce those to encourage people to donate to Kickstarters. Mm-hmm. We get calls on everything from, you know, this is happening in my gallery. Like, is this right? Is this wrong? You know, we get calls to ask for help with, you know, attorneys. So we have some attorney friends that will help, you know, help provide artists help, some financial like advice. So we, you know, you know, when people call, we always try to connect them with people that can help and to stay in touch.
Mm. Yeah, that's a lot of people. Yeah. It's hard to stay in touch. I receive your newsletter. I see. I'm old fashioned in that way. I still like newsletters.
Me too, which is why I put it out.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's a thing. I mean, I think we do pretty irregular, sometimes once a month. Sometimes we have a show and have something to announce or so that we think should reach everyone, not only people on social media. Then we also send one out. But I think it's a very good thing to inform yourself. But then Fountainhead, what I found out through your newsletter is also, I think it's more than just the residency, right? Now.
Right. So we started at the 3 months after starting the residency, we also started a studio program for Miami-based artists, a local studios program. And we did that because before starting the residency, also we hosted a lot of focus groups. Like we were very involved locally. So we wanted to, you know, we wanted to make sure that this dream in our head wasn't a bunch of nonsense, right? So we, you know, we met with a lot of artists and people that were involved in the local community and asked them, you know, does this make sense? Is this valuable to you? And, you know, what else? Like we just had people brainstorming like what else they needed, what else was missing. And so the other piece, and I think this is true, frankly, in most cities, is artists need studio space. And at the time, we had two major complexes, both which still exist. One being the Art Center of South Florida, which is now called Oolite, which actually sold their building for $85 million. Oh, wow. One of their buildings for $85 million.
Okay.
So is building a fantastic new complex in Little Haiti. And then the other one being Bakehouse Art Complex. But with both of those organizations, the artists... one had a longer term commitment. I'm not saying longer term, like a year or two, but they also had commitments as far as the number of hours that they needed to be in their studio kind of during, you know, public times.
Mm-hmm.
They had open, they were to open once a month during the public open houses. And some artists said, you know, we really just need space to work. Like, you know, some people are very kind of interested in always being out there, right? And they're you know, that is a tremendous benefit to many artists, right? Because it could also, they could sell work from their studios. There was a built-in audience. So for some people, that was great, right?
Yeah.
But not everybody wanted that. Some people just wanted space to work.
True.
But at the same time, they wanted a community. So they wanted to be able to close the door, but they wanted to be able to see other people because, as you know, being an artist is a very solitary practice. So when you're thirsting for that interaction, it's nice if you can just walk out your door to get it, right? Mm-hmm. So and then the other thing was to be able to make it long term. In other words, you could stay as long as you want. There weren't term limits. But at the same time, short term, so that if the financial position changed or if you got an opportunity to do a residency somewhere or I don't know what have you, that, you know, within 30 days you could be out as well and not have a lease hanging over your head and a commitment and trying to find someone to sublet in and, you know, who knows what. So that's what created Fountainhead Studios. So it was a space that we have some artists that have been there over 10 years, you know. But it's just local studio space for local artists. We don't own the building, but the rent is about 50% less than a normal, you know, what that space would cost somewhere else. So we're very conscious of keeping the rent very low. And I also have a deal with the landlord that isn't necessarily that. Something that most landlords would be willing to do. But when an artist moves in, their rent does not go up. So that's why we have some artists that have been there for 10 years. Because the rate that they're paying is very inexpensive.
Rent control, yeah.
But also I just think artists need to know that they can be settled. But the good thing is that they also have an option to leave at any time. Mm-hmm. So that's been going on. Yeah. And then last year, we started a project called Artists Open, which is the first ever Miami-Dade countywide Artists Open Studio Day. Mm-hmm. So we actually coordinated with all the other studio complexes, as well as any individual artist that we found that was located in a commercial or industrial space. So we didn't go into artists' homes. I didn't feel comfortable with that. But so over 300 artists opened their studios for the day. And it was an incredible success. Last mm-hmm. year was the first year we're doing it again. It's the Saturday of Mother's Day. And so that's exciting. And then two more things that we started as well. One is financial education and advice for artists, because I mm-hmm. think that, again, we hosted some new focus groups, and that's, a lot of people don't like to talk about it, but frankly, it's important for all of us.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So we're doing that, and that's on everything from budgeting to saving to buying a property, taxes, mm-hmm. you know, all of those things that we all have to know about.
No, I actually still write the invoices for some of my artists.
Yeah,
I pre-write them and then just like have them sign them and I send them the money. So I basically just write the invoice and put them in my my tax
people
system.
People need to know about that.
Yeah, that's part of the education that people probably often don't like about, you know, sort of in the art schools and everything. Just the practicalities of or the practical life of an artist.
Well, but then the challenge is that at least here mm-hmm. they don't really teach that.
No,
I mean, so you have all these incredible skills, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get out and you're like, okay, so how do I make a living? Like what do I do now? And, you know, if you weren't in, you know, one of these top schools where, mm-hmm. you know, people are like standing up waiting to see what you're doing, you know, what do you do next? Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of a, you know, it's a rude awakening, right? And then the one other program that we started actually is called Artist to Artist, and mm-hmm. it's I call it thinking outside the white box. So artists sharing their stories of how they are making a living and thriving, not just sustaining, not just getting mm-hmm. by, but thriving through their art careers, but taking different paths in which to do that.
I think it's actually, I mean, I like that a lot, but I think it's a very American approach on this. It's not German. In Germany, nobody basically is interested in how an artist makes a living. I mean, they come to the exhibitions and they see very few red dots and they think, oh, it's not going to make much money tonight. But nobody really thinks about careers of artists in these terms. It's kind of frowned upon in Germany. We still have a very traditional and maybe antique look at these things. But modern, yeah, it's interesting. I know.
But artists do. So this is from one artist to another artist. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
so
a good.
Trying to teach one another and inspire one another sometimes give them a kick in the ass. Like, you know, the artist that did the first one, Jessie, was fantastic, because she's like, I just have to tell you, she goes, I was one of those artists that, you know, I thought, you know, I would make good work and, you know, people would come to my studio. You know, and then you realize very quickly, that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to get out there.
Yeah.
You got to hustle just like any other choice.
Yeah, but I also understand that it's because you don't get into art to make a living in the first place. I think it's like when we become an artist, you just think about, you know, so it's just something you kind of have to do. It's an urge. It's not, should I become a builder or an artist, or should I study philosophy? It's like, I got to be an artist. So there's this one way to go. And then I understand many artists that do not look into these other things until they're facing them. And I think that's also one part of which makes what artists do so attractive, is that they are outside of the normal standards that other educations go by. But on the other hand, I find it very important to also teach this at some point. And in Germany, universities will not teach this. Our art schools, they do not teach this. So what you're saying, like from artist to artist, I also think that's a very good point, because then they listen.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? So how do you do it? But I mean, that's an exchange between artists that is a fantastic idea. I think that's the underlying underlying thing in everything you do at Fountainhead when you bring them together in a residency. It's not a single residency. We're basically pampered all the time by you, but they have to kind of be independent and live, you know, in a small group. And do you, I mean, I remember when do you still organize exhibitions, or I think you tried to find a place where they could show the results of the residency, what they're doing there?
Yeah, so we, you know, we've looked at and we've done a number of different things. And what we've come back to is, yeah. We do an open house at the residency, mm-hmm. at the end of each term. So that's why I was talking about, yeah. how we kind of organize things to be able to, mm-hmm. have a public event. Every time we did it in another space, whether it be a gallery or just an outside space, the attendance dropped dramatically.
Yeah, okay.
And I think it's because people then felt it was commercial, or maybe, mm-hmm. they felt like, oh, this is about buying and selling versus, mm-hmm. this is about, you know, learning about the artists and their work. Mm-hmm. Which is why people come, you know, they don't, it's not, yes, we have drinks, but it's definitely not a party atmosphere. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Everybody really, like, if anything, the complaints I get is that I never got time with Alfred. Like, why didn't, mm-hmm. I, you know, I tried, I was standing there, you know, like, mm-hmm. and I'm like, well, sometimes people are, you just kind of have to, you know, take part in the conversation. And when he, you know, cause generally when, you know, when artists are presenting, they're, you know, they end up talking to small groups, right? It's very difficult, mm-hmm. to have a one-on-one conversation. So I'm like, you know, just, you know, go in there. Jill wants to talk to everybody. Just, you have to, you know, you have to go in and talk with her. But, yeah. But yes, it's interesting because I did try the kind of, you, mm-hmm. know, outside of the space and put it more in a pretty white box. And, mm-hmm. But it just didn't, it was also just wasn't me. That's not what Fountainhead is about. We want people to feel welcome. When you're coming to a home, you automatically, mm-hmm. feel different than if, mm-hmm. you're coming to a gallery.
I think it's a great idea. It's a great concept. Galleries still have that kind of entrance. Not, it wouldn't call it barrier anymore, but it's something different. And
Yeah, and so, also people like to see where the artist, yeah. is working. They like to see their paints, yeah, and their brushes. And,
yeah, the fascination of the studio, how the studio looks like. I mean, I've seen many, many artist studios, and a lot of them are bland and boring. But most of them are actually really, really exciting, even for me, you know. And I think that's a good thing. But, you know, with all the things that you're doing, I was just wondering, one thing, I think this is everything you do right now, or is there, you're not working anymore in any other capacity or in any other job, or?
That's a good.
And you have a team of, like, I mean, let me guess, 10 people. Oh, you would, yes, love to, absolutely. Have a team of 10 people.
Huge. I have a huge team.
You make your kids have a
Well, so, you know, that's a good question, because when we started, you know, it was funded by Dan and I for the, mm-hmm. first 10 years. Mm-hmm. And when we actually started, we didn't start with this grand plan. So as I said, we were both traveling extensively for work. So we actually had a lot of airline miles.
Yeah.
So when we started, we were flying people in on our airline miles.
Oh, but that's hard.
And then for a couple of years, Dan was going back and forth to Brazil 3 times a month. So that provided some good airline miles.
Yeah.
And whenever we got low, I'm like, love, don't you need to go somewhere kind of far away for a little while? You don't have to stay gone for long. You just have to go there and come back, you know. But you know, that quickly, you know, that kind of quickly ran out and wasn't, you know, the airlines got a little bit tighter with their travel dates, and then all of a sudden, mm-hmm. what used to be 20,000 miles was now 70,000 miles, and, mm-hmm. so that didn't work. So then so then we just had to start paying for everything, and so we did for 10 years, and then we, mm-hmm. kind of sat back and said, okay, we're like, what are we doing? Like, is this still a passion project, or is this, mm-hmm. you know, has this become like an institution, like a real, has this become a thing, you, yeah. know? And we talked to a lot of people, and, it became an important part of our city. It became an important, mm-hmm. part of, you know, artists' lives. So we're like, okay, you know, if we're going to do this, because I was working full time in tech you know.
Yeah, I remember.
And that was funding it, you know. And so we kind of said, okay, I think we need to like come up with a long term plan. And that's when we decided to, you know, to become a nonprofit. And it was very interesting because, you know, over the years, people had offered, you know, can I make a donation? And we'd say, no, we got this. It's all, you know, no, we don't accept donations. And we realized that once we started to accept donations, mm-hmm. more people in the community actually really felt a part of it. Which is how we always wanted people to feel about it, right? It's like we never wanted people to look at it and say, you know, sorry, I was moving my chair. And we never wanted this to be Catherine and Dan. We always wanted this to be Miami. This was Fountainhead. Mm-hmm. This was a family, you know. And not that people didn't feel that way, but I think, but when we turned it into a nonprofit, just a lot of people came and really... Mm-hmm. wanted to be a part of it. And I have to tell you, I was scared to death to do it. And it's not easy. I'll be honest. It's a whole other set of challenges and opportunities when you become a nonprofit.
Rules and regulations probably as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And you have a board and there's more people in decision-making and things, but for me, that's kind of all good. Like, I don't know. I really, I've really enjoyed being a nonprofit. So now we're a fully community supported nonprofit, and this is what I'm doing full time and have been for the last, like stopping other activities. Cause I was always trying to do more things to continue to fund, do what I could to fund it till we built up the funding. Mm-hmm. But now, we've received our 501c3 in April of last year.
All right. Yeah, but good for you. I mean, it's probably a very difficult always to jump between two jobs and professions and everything. And you got your hands full with your family as well, I guess.
And a family that I love very much and like to see.
Yeah. Are there any of your kids? You have a son and a daughter. And is any of your kids in art?
Our son went to a special art school all the way through. Wow. Our daughter did creative writing in middle school, and actually she's a very good writer, and I think she's considering pursuing that as as a career after high school. She's a junior in high school.
Oh, that's a tough one. You got to be very disciplined for that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. She is very disciplined. So, right. But our son is a visual artist, and, he actually had a show when he was 16 that did have to do with someone coming to our home, but they actually saw the work, loved the work, and said, can you introduce us to this artist? And we're like, yes, we can. Actually, it's our 16-year-old son. And so he had his first gallery show in LA, which is pretty cool. But so yes, he's taking a break right now because he's starting in a new school in either January or in the summer, which he's going to art school. But for now he's taking a little break and just focusing on school. And I think, you know, he's been in art like all his life. So I think it's a good idea for him to, you know, take a little step back so that he can get a clear mind. And then when he goes to college when he goes to art school, he can, you know, buckle down and.
Yeah, but I mean, you think if your parents have a garage, then you can repair a car at 14 as well. You'll probably be driving around with the coolest car in town when you're 15, 16. Yeah.
He's definitely. He's used our home absolutely as a studio. Yes, I am. he's used studios in our home. He's taken over the backyard. He's taken over the studio at the studio complex. Right. So he's.
All right, got to check him out.
I had a lot of opportunity.
Yeah. He's definitely on Instagram, right? Like every artist today. one thing that I wanted to ask, but I mean, firstly, I think it's great when you have when you can inspire your kids. My little one, for example, he's 8. When he was asked what art his father does, and he says, my father paints with wood. Because in a way, you know, that's... that's a little bit what I do.
That's amazing.
And he really likes to be here, and he really likes to, when at the openings, really likes to entertain the guests and everything. But my oldest son, Melvin, who's 21 now, he is the official manager of Helium Cowboy. Now that he started university, though, his time is very limited.
Right.
But it's not
like,
that
honey,
we're doing
I really
more shows.
Need to work.
Yeah. Well, but and also this the funny story. He's of course, because he was is part to my process all the time and in the studio and all these things. He's always been painting and drawing and stuff. And I still have some of my favorite drawings on our wall at home are by him. You know, especially when it's around sports characters. So he is. He's made this Blake Griffin that he did when he was, I think, 14, 15 is still iconic. You know, but that's of course the father thing too. But I think from my professional perspective, it's really good. And he has, I've asked him at the 15 years anniversary show of Helium Cowboy, where we've showed one work of, I think, 55 artists. I invited him at two. I said, you're working with me on this show and do you want to have a piece in this show? And he said, yes. And he made this little drawing and put it on the wall. And it was really good. It was the first work we've sold. That evening.
Oh, congratulations. That's amazing.
So it was basically the first red dot that he, you know, put on the wall that evening. And then we went to an art fair in Denmark last year, and he was also with me, and he had two drawings and one we installed in the booth. And that was also the first work we sold. They're super cheap, of course, but still, that's not. And now we have this little kiosk installation that he did, and he made this little drawing for this show. And I was a little bit, you know, so I said, well, you know, sort of it's a good work, but you know, why didn't you do more, two or three? Because he didn't have the time, because he had to do the exhibition.
Right.
And you know, so I was so busy with everything. He sounded like me a little bit. And and I was sold also at the very first thing. And in each three cases, nobody knew that the work was by him, was his work, you know, because it's just like he has an artist name, and you know, so and since then he's always saying, okay, so when you have a work of me in the show, it's always going to be successful.
Right. You can count on that selling, Dad.
Yeah. But I mean, with his prices, it's not gonna cover.
Do not discount it because the prices, the work is good.
Yeah.
That's why it's sold.
Yeah. That's really good.
That's amazing.
But it's fine. Yeah.
I remember this is another cute story, not having to do with the making of art, but you know, during some more like challenging times when we were still funding the residency ourselves, we went to the kids, and it was coming up on Christmas time, you know, and things were tight. Mm-hmm. And we said to the kids, we said, you know, we really, you know that mommy and daddy put a lot into the, you know, into the residency. And what if, you know, this Christmas and maybe for a little while, you know, we'd have to, like, more of the money would need to go there, which would mean that it would change Christmas a little bit, you know, like the electronics or the things that you really want, you know, we just can't afford to get at this time. But we want to know that, you know, we were kind of asking, like, do you guys value what we're doing too? Like, is it an important part of your life as well? And they both said, oh gosh, the residency, like we don't need that stuff. You know, those are nice to have, but no, don't worry about Christmas. Don't worry about, you know, the next couple of months. We want the residency.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was such a, I think I did cry. It was just so, it was so beautiful. And I say, you know, we talk about our kids and art, but I mean, I really think I go back to the people. Like the one thing I'm more proud of than anything is that we've raised two open-minded children that are, you know, that embrace the differences in others and like, you know, we'll talk to anybody, or we'll not just talk to anybody, we'll listen, you know, to anybody. We'll be interested in hearing different stories. And I think that's what I'm like, that's what I'm most proud of.
Yeah. Yeah. You can. Yeah, I agree. So kids aside, there's one question that I still have on my mind is that the podcast that I'm doing now for, 1.5 years, I think, is actually when I look at the people that listen to the podcast, I think it's 80% artists.
Okay.
And these are the people that are most interested in these stories, probably. I don't know. I mean, that's just like, you know, if that's my demographics, I think it's mostly artists. And if I don't ask the questions during the podcast that you know, if I forget to ask certain questions in podcast, they will send me mails afterwards.
And right.
It would have been nice if you would have just, you know, if you would have just asked this.
Ask the damn questions.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. And then the question is it how do you find your artists?
Yes. Yeah. So most of our artists are through nomination. Mm-hmm. And then through partnerships that we have. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of changing this up a little bit. We are, because we started off very early on being open for applications. Mm-hmm. And then within a couple years, we were getting, you know, like 500 applications a year. And for mm-hmm. me, that was saying no 460 times, you know. Mm. And that is just not in my nature. It's really, it was really hard for me. So that's when we went to nomination mm-hmm. and recommendation. We also found that also just made certain that the artists coming were interested in what we had to offer, right? Mm-hmm. that they were the right people for the residency, because the people nominating them knew the residency. And it, you know, we talked about, you know, you're bringing together three people that have never met. Not everybody wants to be in that environment, right? You're going to see people you don't know in their PJs. You know, it's you're going to share a bathroom with somebody you don't know. You know, not everybody's game for that. Yeah. You know, and the studio spaces are, they're not totally private, you know, so it's an environment that is not for everybody. Thankfully, it's for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So, but I do want to go back to having an opportunity to just meet artists that are completely outside of our circles, outside of anyone we know. Even though the majority of our artists come from nomination and recommendations from our alumni, I should mm-hmm. say that. So,
okay.
Because I think that's important, because that's, mm-hmm. you know, again, a global network of artists. But so I do want to find some more ways to do more open calls. Right now we have an open call that we're getting ready, to open. A lot of uses of the word open, but that's for US based artists that has that is foreign born.
Okay.
So that's one that we're opening up. That's a special project through the Shepherd Broad Foundation. And then we have a partner, the Africa Center. They do an open call to the continent of Africa, from which one artist is selected. We have a similar partnership with the country of Colombia, Ministry of Culture of Colombia. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually looking, so if anybody knows, I am looking for opportunities to bring more artists from Europe, because while we have in the past, we actually mm-hmm. don't have any formal relationships with organizations, you know, in Europe. Because I'd like to do more like that. I just set up one with the Ministry of Culture of Spain. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking to do more of that. So again, to provide more opportunities to come in, artists that we don't know. So if anybody has any recommendations,
yeah, I can think of some things. I can tell you later. I mean, there's like mm-hmm. there's a few. I think there's one private institution that I'm thinking about, a collector from Hamburg who is very well connected and a super nice guy, and who just started his own, well, it's his, he calls it an art institute, but it's like a living museum, you know, just outside of Hamburg. He has a huge collection, everything. And he also starts something like a residency program there. His name's Rick Reinking, and he's a good friend of mine. And that's an amazing space, something that's very unique for us here, because we don't have many residencies or anything here. And he's got a good guy, and I think you guys should get in touch at some point. I'd get you in touch. Maybe that's something, you know.
Yeah,
and if not, it's just a nice. He's a nice guy. You're a very nice person. So I mean, I think it's a nice contact. You know?
Yeah. One of the other things that we also knew this year is I'm trying to reach out to other cities within the United States. You know, mm-hmm. people talk about New York and LA, and you know. Miami stuff, but there are many other cities that have mm-hmm. talented artists. So we're trying to do a focused like city each year. Mm-hmm. So this year it's actually Pittsburgh. So the Heinz Ketchup, mm-hmm. Heinz Endowment is sponsoring three artists from Pittsburgh.
Okay.
So you know, so we're trying to do different things again, just to kind of broaden the reach.
Yeah, sounds good. And what's the best way to?
And we're also trying to add stipends. That's the other thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my fundraising push for the next.
Okay, but that would not just year. Mean in your residency, but it's a general thing, and it's like a next layer mm-hmm. to your activities, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because we do, you know, like I said, we provide round trip airfare, living and working accommodations, you know, one on one studio visits. Access to museums and all of the different activities that we do while we're here, you know, several meals a month, but they're not, you know, they're unofficially official, you know, and but I'd love to also add stipends, at least enough to like cover shipping of work and mm-hmm. you know,
material costs. Do you keep a work from what people produce there? Is there anything that I mean? You do keep a collection of the residency? I mean, that must be quite impressive at some point.
Well, so we did in the beginning, but we don't now. No, we haven't for several years. It you know, we did because we kind of always wanted to have like a little mm-hmm. piece of everybody, mm-hmm. you know, but we realized, I don't know, we just wanted to give to artists. And I felt like when we were asking for something mm-hmm. in return, I didn't want to do that anymore. I don't know. Yeah. People tell us we're crazy, and we probably, I mean, like, listen, we kind of are, but it wasn't about that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But no, we don't.
Yeah, well, I mean, it would have been, I mean, you probably needed extra storage for that now, right?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Catherine, I forget anything? Is anything you still want to say?
I'm so happy that you came into my life. I admire you so much.
I still remember that moment.
I mean, you know, we can go a year without talking and it doesn't matter. Yeah. I think the world of you, and I think the way that you have built your community, the way that you're now focusing on your own practice. I had to say that I love the way that your family's involved. I wish I lived next door to you.
Well, I wish I could come to Miami more often because I really seriously miss you guys. I mean, I still remember that was the highlight of, I think 2008 was it or 2007. Mm-hmm. That was my highlight meeting you mm-hmm. and then visiting you the next day. That was the year you actually bought a Barry McGee, I think.
Yeah, so that was the year that we bought the three Barry McGee surfboards.
Yeah, and I was at your home, and we had, you know, that was super nice, and we should actually, you know, I mean that's a problem at some point. It's very hard to the distance makes is an issue here, but I, you know, as I said, I same here. I follow everything you do. I was really really curious, and I found it really important to talk about this residency program because I don't see anything, at least not around me, that has a similar impact for young and for emerging artists, and this is more important now than ever, where everybody's an artist and everybody's visible, you know, sort of somewhere on the internet, and getting the support in art is, I know it myself as a practicing artist, even though the gallery and everybody thinks that I'm sad because I have that, but that's just not how all of this works.
Not how it works.
No, it's just not how it works. And yeah, I'm glad we could make this happen, you know. And Yeah, and one question I still have is that how can people follow? I mean, we can follow up because we know each other and I get your newsletter. I mean, they should subscribe to your newsletter, but I know not many people like to do that these days.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, so what's the best way to follow you around?
I'm very much, I'm trying. So you asked about my team. So it's you know, it's very small. it's me. And,
you know,
and Dan is always there when I need him. He doesn't, you know, do day to day stuff, but he's my rock and always very helpful. He's great at taking a few artists under his wing and like helping them with the business side of things. So that's nice. But I do now have an artist that is helping me with social media.
Okay.
Because it's not my strength. Mm-hmm. And so we're getting better on social media. So we're starting to post, you know, more regularly. So I think social media is probably the Instagram, you know, at Fountainhead Residency is probably the best way to follow what we're up to. And then, well, at Fountainhead Residency and at Fountainhead Studios.
Okay.
That's the studios being the local.
Yeah. I'll also put that into the show notes of the podcast. So then, people can read up on it when they listen.
I will someday be updating my website once I know the website's old and tired, but I built it, so that's all. That's not my expertise.
Yeah. Well, I always say that the thing is with social media, it's like you're renting this and it can be taken away under your feet anytime, whereas your website is like your own house, you know. So that's why I'm still, but as I said, I'm pretty old fashioned that way. I think websites
are very important. I'm interested in updating my website. I just haven't had the time.
All right. Okay, Catherine, I won't steal more of your time. I want you to enjoy your day today. It's early in Miami and it's late afternoon in Hamburg. Thanks for doing this.
No, this is it was an honor, really. I thank you so very much for having me be a part of it. Have a beautiful day.
And you.
Bye.
Helium Talk.